legend becomes fact. Print the legend.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Trusting in the sanity and restraint of the United States is not a strategy, and it is not an option.
We don't need no thought control.
What's a conspiracy notion out there? How much influence do you have? Was it you and your fellow neoconservatives that created the momentum towards overthrowing Saddam Hussein?
Nobody does a thing in this town without our approval.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.
Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom, along with my co-host, the great American Judge Buster, Sherman H. Skolnick. Sherman's on assignment tonight. Stepping in for him is Captain May with a special memorial briefing. It's 11 a.m., Captain, on the 29th of November. Special day, 1129 is 1111. And welcome back to Cloak and Dagger.
Boy, adding up to it, Lenny, it's 1111 and then 1:01.
So, and you certainly are
one
of the...
It's a Black Banner Day for Ghost Troop. We've brought in a new member. I discussed the death of Colonel Ted Westhusing, former West Point instructor, who was covered in the L.A. Times the 27th, November 27th. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Okay.
I discussed that with my Ghost Troop officers, those being former... military officers from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, and we've elected him to join the Holy Horde. We think that he is a bona fide InfoWar martyr, and there's honor in that, and there's great sorrow in it, too. But ultimately, I suppose that now's an appropriate time to not merely to bury but to praise Colonel Westhusing. Perhaps I should familiarize your listeners with the case.
Yeah, please do.
Colonel Westhusing... was one of the best and the brightest. I think I'd bumped into him a time or two. We were the same age and graduated a year apart, although he was a West Pointer. He had spent a very successful career in airborne special operations. He was an infantry officer, a West Pointer himself, number three in his class, a very talented officer who had an intellectual predilection and came back after a successful career in the field to West Point, and was sent out to study ethics and philosophy, quite a polymath. After doing a tour at West Point, or after spending a great amount of time there teaching students, he developed a particular interest in military honor, and particularly the classical perspective of military honor. And at a certain point in 2004, applied for Iraq, thinking that he should experience that so that he could better teach the students. He didn't have to go. He went to make a difference, as so many people did, as I almost did, Lenny. You know, I volunteered to get back into the mix, and I was ineligible. My commission couldn't be reactivated. So, you know, a lot of us wanted to do the right thing. He got to Iraq and was training Iraqi military police or Iraqi police officer, but was also sitting as a supervisor for USIS, USIS, U.S. Corporation, making money off training people in Iraq. He came to think that it was a boondoggle and became confrontational with the people heading up that corporation. And the in and the out of it is that he became, and within a month, began to write cryptic emails to his family about how bad things were. His wife noticed that when he talked to her on the phone, there sounded to be the tone of fear in his voice. He wrote a cryptic email to the effect of how he didn't think he would get through a certain night. And sure enough, he went to a meeting with the USIS people at USIS headquarters by the Baghdad International Airport and died of a single gunshot wound to the head. Evidently, one of the USIS employees had been handling the gun, but explained that he did that because he wanted to remove the gun from the colonel. What's ironic is that we're reading this November 27, 2005. It occurred in June 2005. The military had just come in with an official finding that it was suicide, but nothing about Colonel West Houston's background suggests suicide. He was noted as a devout Catholic, a family man. Everything, Lenny, not to beat around the bush about this, you and I know each other well, and the reason I'm particularly interested in talking to you about Colonel West Husing is because I think what he did was what in the military we call a mission of conscience. He decided that he had seen abuses in Iraq, and he mentions a lot of different categories of them, and he felt sullied by it, and I suppose particularly by the profiteering. There's no other word for it, the war profiteering that was going on with these Bush boys and friends of Bush boys. And it looks like he was lured to a meeting and assassinated. Right now, we see this kind of two-step going on between the media and the military trying to find reasons to slander and traduce this man's good name. But there are only three perspectives to take of this, Lenny. One, he was onto something that was so bad that he killed himself rather than confront it because he felt so bad about it. Two, he was coerced into a suicide. Or three, he was suicided. Three on that sounds so strongly the case that the other two are really tangents for me at this point. But the official story is suicide. I think he simply joined the martyr list, joined the list of people who have been suicided because they tried to stand up for the right thing. Incidentally, the Army sent out a psychiatrist or a counselor or something to this effect, Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Breitenbach. I'm trying to get some info on her from right now. She's not from West Point. She was one of the people the Army sent out to look at this. And basically what she said is he couldn't learn how to compromise his principles. And he couldn't shift from a mindset of doing duty irrespective of cost. I think this is simply official boilerplate for an official suicide. And I at this point, the only thing I'm wondering is, did the L.A. Times let this story out because they want to wake people up to what kind of things these people will do? Or did they send this around because they want to shake people up and keep people from doing what the colonel did? Well, the colonel did the right thing.
Well,
He's a hero.
The law of averages today when you see somebody committed suicide is that they've been suicided.
Yeah, particularly when you see it in the official level. And, you know, I guess the problem, or rather, if you want to call it a problem, the thing that makes me able to pick this up so clearly is that, like Colonel West Husing, Yamagu Gabadi Paruski, I was a military intelligence trained Russian linguist, and I spent a lot of time with Soviet media. And people died of suicide in the Soviet Union, too. The same kinds of people with the same kinds of backgrounds in the same kinds of situations. And nobody in the Army was dumb enough to think that that Russian suicide stuff was anything but official assassination. But suddenly, because it's being done to us, the people who were paid to be officially dumb, the spokespeople and the media whores, are writing it up as if it's completely the opposite of what it is, writing it up as if it is suicide, when anybody can see that this isn't suicide. The man's a foundational Christian, a strong Catholic. He was in the fight of his life. He was in a political administrative fight with corrupt officers and profiteers. He believed utterly in what he was doing. He was telling his wife he'd be able to tell her more about it, not just in cryptic emails, when he got home within a month of the time he got killed. You know, Lenny, they used to, in the KGB, I don't know why it is that somehow this all seems funnier when you talk about how it was done in the Soviet Union, but it does. The Soviet Union used to go pop somebody in the head and then put on the official cause of death, cerebral hemorrhage. It was just their little cute way of saying, yeah, we did one.
Right.
What are you going to do? And the answer was usually, well, fall into line and not have a cerebral hemorrhage myself. And that's what this is. I want to mention that there are a couple of other, you know, what we're getting is misinformation about the soldier, about the man, the warrior, Colonel West Husing.
Right.
But that's nothing strange. Give you a couple other examples of misinformation victims. Pat Tillman, remember the U.S. pro football player who left the Arizona Cardinals, one of our U.S. football teams, and joined the military? Well, he got friendly fire killed, man. I mean, that happened. But what happened was the military went on a concerted disinformation campaign. For God's sake, the Whitewash House was calling Tillman's parents to try to get them to let the president do some kind of moving tribute to him, all based upon utter lies. The truth was, it was a tragic friendly fire incident. At least we suppose. That seems to be the latest version of truth. But it was not heroic combat against the Taliban. It was getting yourself shot by your own side.
Yes.
I mean, they framed it. Or the one that brought me into the info war, you know, the same way Colonel Tillman, or Colonel Wes Husing, came in, I would say took on a mission of conscience because he saw how bad and dishonorable the abuse was in Iraq, particularly involving war profiteering, and moral abuses, too, by the way. He mentions it specifically. Well, the thing that did that for me was realizing what Private Jessica Lynch was all about, knowing that there was a battle going down for Baghdad that the U.S. public had a constitutional interest in understanding, and I knew that because I was a public affairs officer. I know what the public's right to know is, and I know what the rules governing the public right to know is. It's a Department of Defense Public Affairs Information, Principles of Information. The public was supposed to find out about Baghdad, but what they did is they did another misinformation thing. They took Jessica Lynch, and they put her up on the screen. And by the way, that was an abuse of Jessica Lynch. If we had taken a prisoner of war from the enemy and filmed them and used them for a propaganda shot, it would have been against different international conventions that we've signed. It was exactly what we were, you know, headed, we were mad at the Iraqis for doing during the wars. They were showing U.S. prisoners. But we did it with our own people, with Jessica Lynch. Why? So they could cover up the real story, which was that hundreds of U.S. soldiers were dying between the airport and the statue pull down, which was another bit of information. So misinformation and GI death seem to just go hand in hand. You know, we come back to that thing, Lenny, we were talking last night. Kindly, someone said that my analysis and Ghost Troop and Ghost Troop's work proved that there was such a thing as military intelligence, that it was an oxymoron. Well, I think Colonel Wes Husing proves that there is a such thing as what he was teaching, which is military ethics. You know, he kept the oath. He took on a mission of conscience, and look what he got. But the point is that he did do it. I mean, the deep truth here is that Army officers from within the system even, you know, it was much easier for me outside the system at that point.
Right.
But even officers from within the system are willing to stand up to systemic abuse. Let's hope that he's the first of many. I want to mention that there are other people who have been InfoWar martyrs.
Yes.
Not just InfoWar misinformation
people.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
Well, you can pick a few of them, Lenny. You know, I said that I got into the info war when the Battle of Baghdad was covered up. That was April 5th, 2003. I rode out to Fort Stewart, Georgia, for God's sake, to get the story straight. I was a former general staff officer. I was able to talk my way onto an Army post and get in touch with conscientious officers who would talk to me. And before I'd been at Fort Stewart for half a day, one of the chaplains, Colonel Neil Dennington, was telling me that special forces detachments would be shutting up anybody who let too much information out, and I best keep my mouth shut up about the covered-up Battle of Baghdad. I mean, all this was said in fine, glowing terms and very nicely, but it was insinuated, and it was insinuated clearly. I mean, the man had a constitution in his vest pocket, his left chest pocket. No, his right. So he could pull it out and assure everybody and assure me that the Constitution wasn't being overthrown. He had it right in his pocket, and the Army was just keeping it safe for us. They'd bring it out when everything was finished. This is the kind of thing that was going on immediately. By the time July came along, I had done just what Colonel Wes Husing had done. Between May 14th, 2003, and July 1st, 2003, that being 6 weeks, from the time I knew that there was a cover-up of the Battle of Baghdad and that dependents, military dependents, were being thugged and drugged to keep them shut up at Fort Stewart, Georgia, from the time I knew that the dead were being covered up, desecrated, and that their dependents were being brutalized and shut up, I had 6 weeks where I probably did everything that Wes Husing, Colonel Wes Husing, would be shown to have done. I stopped eating. I started worrying. I became querulous. I picked fights. My training in martial arts was down. You know, I'm a black belt teacher.
Uh-huh.
Everything about me said I was in distress, and indeed I was in distress. That's the normal reaction of a man who realizes that his country is lying unconstitutionally to its people and who feels that he has to do something about it but isn't quite ready. That's exactly what Colonel West Husing did. And then when I came out to get active in it again, it was 2 days after Ambassador Joe Wilson's op-ed ran in the New York Times, that being July 6, 2003. 2 days later, my editors at the Houston Chronicle ran my last essay for the Houston Chronicle, July 8, 2003.
Uh-huh.
Lenny, that's when things started getting hot in July of 2003, and people are still talking about it to this day. What they're talking about is Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson and the CIA leak and all that. That's where you catch it mainstream.
Well, it's
what was happening underneath the surface was that everybody was getting scared for their life.
Yeah, it's
editors were taking vacations. People were dodging my pieces. Military and media contacts were telling me I'd better duck. And finally, I ducked into the underground. That was 6 hours before Dr. David Kelly, a Blair war critic in England, mysteriously committed suicide.
Yeah, it's standard practice, you know, when somebody's paradigm of the world gets shattered, that they go into a sort of depression. It doesn't mean they're going to commit suicide.
Of course. I mean, of course. If you could take the, you know, we all have emotions and emotional reactions, and finding out that your country is cheating is like finding out that the woman or the man you're married to is cheating. It's infidelity. You know, it strikes you deeply. But what I did was I came out fighting. I came out swinging in July of 2003. And, Lenny, let me tell you who I was in touch with. Just like Colonel West Husing, you go to people and you make confrontations. None of the people who are confronted want to be confronted because most of them are implicated by commission or omission.
Exactly.
And in his case, he went to various military commanders and he went directly to the company he was supposed to be supervising, USIS. In my case, I was, July 8th, Houston Chronicle major op-ed attacking Bush in his hometown. July 7th, Clear Channel Communications talked my way onto KPRC radio at 9:50 a.m. in Houston and got them to let me talk about the Battle of Baghdad from a cover-up perspective for 10 minutes because they didn't know they weren't supposed to talk about it yet. Then their DJ got sent off on 2 days, 2 weeks vacation instantly. July 10th, John McCain's press secretary, Rebecca Hanks, confrontational conversation, follow-up email. July 11th, Tom Daschle. New York Times' Tom Shanker. You pick him. ABC Robert Buttermilk, national news desk editor. It just goes on and on. I crashed every barrier I could because it finally looked in July as if the media was going to tell the truth about what had happened in Baghdad, was going to tell that they'd been doing cover-ups, and was going to pull the plug on this bag of crap they call the Iraq War. And by the way, everybody now is calling it a bag of crap. Even the military is saying, for God's sake, the biggest problem there is us. It goes back to an old joke I made up, Lenny, a black joke.
Yes.
How do you get out of quicksand? Quick. And now we're to the point that finally people with four stars and, you know, and cabinet positions are realizing that any infantry soldier in the mud could have realized that. And they did. It was in July of 2003 that you had the NCOs, the sergeants from Baghdad, saying if Rumsfeld were here, we'd ask for his resignation. And the Bush people came out against the reporter who did that story, the ABC reporter who released it. They tried to out him as a gay through the Drudge Report. There was an offense against the Bush people, an attack, a media attack of constitutional people during July of 2003, and that was enough to get me out of my foxhole to take this on. The same way something happened that made Colonel West Husing go from a person who was losing weight, worried, and fearful, for God's sake. He knew what was going on. A man who was worried and fearful, who was telling people that he'd tell them more when he could, went from being a worried, fearful man to saying death before dishonor. He actually said that. They say that he was found with a little note that said, you know, I'm not going to be dishonored by this anymore, better death than dishonor.
Well,
no, it was a four-page letter.
Yeah, well, Captain May, what's really happening in the big picture here is that corporate interests have taken over control of the state apparatus in the United States, and now the Pentagon is taking orders not from the president so much as from Halliburton executives who now control the White House. And so the Army and the Pentagon and the armed services of America are being used for the corporations, and this is what these people must be perceiving down at the ground level, a number of them, seeing that, hey, it's all about oil, it's all about oil, it's got nothing to do with about democracy and all these highfalutin ideas.
Right. I think that
that must be hard for military people to accept that, hey, we're wearing a uniform that says United States, that says the United States on it, but really we should take off this uniform and put on Halliburton security operatives. Because that's what the whole Pentagon has been turned into, a security corporation and a fighting operation for Halliburton.
Well, it's not like the best and brightest didn't see it a long time ago. You know, nobody faults. By the way, I'm a Republican before anybody thinks that I'm a Bolshevik member of the Anarchist Party or some such thing. I mean, I was a Republican. Now I'm. Maybe being a Republican means no more Bush monarchy. How's that? I'm an anti-monarchical Republican. Ike Eisenhower was a Republican and a four-star general and a West Point man. Coached the West Point football team, by the way. And there was also a ghostwriter, Lenny, like I was. Bright man. Ike Eisenhower left the presidency in 61, and in his valedictory told us to beware the growing influence of a military-industrial complex. What has happened is simply what architects of the American strategic state saw as a danger from the very start. Remember, Eisenhower goes back to pre-World War II, to pre-World War I.
Yeah.
And he saw the emergence of this whole thing cresting with World War II. And then in the 40s, you know this better than I do, but there was a conscious effort to ramp the nation into a military-industrial hyperpower to counterbalance the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Well, now everything that was forecast about the growing influence of the military-industrial complex seems to have culminated, seems to have erupted after the 9/11 event in the Middle East. So now what you have now is war profiteering of the same sort that you had, for heaven's sake, when the Republicans occupied the South. All the same motives. You know, people don't need to understand Iraqi history. People need to understand American history.
Uh-huh.
The Civil War was the same thing. You had your industrialists, your war profiteers pushing the war, and then you had your people who wanted to have what? Occupation and Reconstruction. I mean, does that sound familiar?
Exactly.
It's no. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Or as my late professor, Dr. Peter Gunther, told me, it's all cyclical, you know. He was German. So it's come full circle. And now the precepts of the great presidents who made them are being forgotten. You never hear anybody quoting Eisenhower except Andy Rooney. Andy Rooney quoted on 60 Minutes, I think, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and of course, Oliver Stone.
George Washington's advice to avoid foreign entanglement? Man, there must be a ban on quoting George Washington's valedictory address after he left the presidency, which was to avoid foreign entanglement. You say this war is oil, and you're right. This war is oil. This war is big business redistributing wealth in America under the pretext of war. And this war is Israeli political interests which require a solution to the Middle Eastern problem and require more resources than they have personally, meaning us. It's a threefold thing. And the colonel jumped right into the teeth of that. And there's no way on earth he could have, at the point he was at, understood the full dimension of it, because you have to leave the team to figure it out. And he was still on the team. But he saw enough of it to know it was rotten. Like, Lenny, you know how much, if people will listen to the other interviews you and I have done on Cloak and Dagger, I've done a wide array with Ghost Troop through you in the InfoWar, but it all started with one abuse that was so great that I couldn't conscience it. And that was Jessica Lynch, the Battle of Baghdad, and then the thugging and drugging they did at Fort Stewart, where they had our wounded out in tents, not able to get into hospitals, and the media sat there and reported it without ever explaining that the reason that it happened was because there were so many wounded from the Battle of Baghdad. And this is speculating. Probably they wanted to keep them all in one place so the story wouldn't get out. So they didn't give a damn if the soldiers sat out there and rotted in the sun. You dig? This is the way it's all gone down, man.
Yeah.
That's the off-the-reservation assessment of how it's going down now. And the Colonel West Husing found that out, and he found it out honorably. He confronted it. But right now, to see this threadbare piece of crap that they're calling an official investigation slander this man who gave his life for something. A teacher, a man who's teaching young warriors. Lenny, I've got friends who graduate from West Point next year and who graduated this year. I know the kids he's teaching. People in my martial arts school go to West Point. You know, sons of professors of mine go to West Point. And this man was trying to give his life or to risk his life to prove how an ethical officer acted in unusual stress. And there's no stress like war. And what's happened is that the official explanation has made him look like a weakling who couldn't handle duty. And that's an outrage. Every officer should be outraged. You know, I had a big advantage in the InfoWar, Lenny, and I want to give, since this is a memorial service, my mentor in the InfoWar from the very start was a gentleman named Professor Peter W. Gunther, but he had been Hauptmann Gunther, or Captain Gunther of the Wehrmacht, a Panzer officer who spent 5 years on the Eastern Front. And he was the first one to exhort me to confront what he already knew was a systemic war plan built on criminal intent and inevitably entailing criminality at every point. And he urged me to push forward and not to let that happen because he had seen better than any officer alive in the military today what can happen when you allow criminal conduct and criminal purpose to go unquestioned and unchecked. You know, the best and brightest are the ones who are leaving the reservation right now and starting to talk out, Lenny. And that's why this best and brightest man needed to have representation and needs to have representation. They're trying to end him in shame because for a man to commit suicide when there's such an important mission in front of him would be a shame. It'd be a shame to any military man. And I know that this military man did not do that. I know exactly where he was. He was full steam ahead. He'd said, to hell with it, death before dishonor. And he went in to confront these rascals, and these rascals popped him. That's how it went down, Lenny.
Well, of course.
I'll give you another InfoWar martyr while we're right there. The one right before the war, Rachel Corey, March 16, 2003. U.S. girl standing up in front of bulldozers in Palestine trying to get the Israelis to stop bulldozing the Palestinian homes. That operation had been going on for a while. But 3 days before the war started, they ran Rachel Corey down with a bulldozer, Sharon the bulldozer. And it wasn't until after I met her dad, Staff Sergeant Craig Corey, Vietnam veteran with the 1st Cavalry Division, my home unit. I've been a buck sergeant with that unit back in the 70s. It wasn't until I met her dad at a tribute, a memorial service for Rachel, that I put it together from what he said, that was a cover-up. It was an assassination all the way. They'd replaced drivers on the bulldozer that morning. She wasn't standing in front of the target, man. She was the target. She just didn't know it. That's the kind of little story that just runs through the InfoWar. And us talking about it, man, we're out of the loop. The people who are in the loop are the people who wanted the wannabe shakers and movers who have to climb through this Byzantine crap. And along the way, think that they're smart because they learn to talk without saying anything. And they learn to pretend to act when they're really just going along. They're acting all right, acting as in drama, but not as in officers. That, you know, it's a compromise all the way through, and the compromisers are the ones who sit back and say, yeah, he got it because he didn't know how to respect the system or compromise. So they're going down the same route that I was very fortunate from the very first day to have a German officer from the last World War, say, that's the wrong route, you can't go down that. And apropos of Colonel Westhusing's Catholicism, Lenny, you know, before our July 28, 2005 interview, when things were getting pretty rough in Houston, you know that I'd gone to a Catholic priest before I re-entered the InfoWar. And the reason was to get baptized. It was my wife's church. And when I came back into the InfoWar, you know that I'd been out from January to June 2005, I fully expected not to make it a month. You know that when we did the interview, which is on your page, I didn't know if I was going to make it through the night. And that's exactly when I read in this article, and I encourage everyone to look it up. It's the L.A. Times, November 27th, about Colonel Ted Westhusing.
Yeah.
When I read this and I read the kind of things this man's sending back, the kind of statements he's making, I realize they're the statements of a man who's doing his duty, who realizes the implications, possible assassination. Call it a fragging, for God's sake. Get assassination out of there. Just call it a fragging. Everybody knows that happened in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Well, this one happened from up top, not from on bottom. It wasn't the privates who did it. It was the contractors who did it. It wasn't the privates. It was the private contractors. Because he was pushing too hard.
Yeah.
You know, Lenny, we could go on and
we
on.
We could go
about
on and on, but I think that you've... We're pretty short on time here. We're going to wrap it up. But, Captain May, for our listeners who enjoy your briefing, and there are many, please give us some information about where people can contact you and hear more about your stuff.
Well, the best thing to do at this point is simply go to your search engine and click in, or rather, search the phrase Ghost Troop, GHOSTTROOP. And throw my name in if you want to. I go by Captain May. That is my rank, and that is my name. I've reactivated on a mission of conscience. I was advised that I should do that by Department of the Army Public Affairs in September of 2003. Because when I talked to them, they said, what you're saying sounds like a mission of conscience. Is that what you're on? And I realized, yeah, that's what I'm on. And so if you look up Ghost Troop Captain May, you'll see what has come out of my particular mission of conscience, which has led me to form a cyber militia group comprised of professional officers like me who have seen so many of the abuses that we can't take it anymore. We're on a mission of conscience, just like Colonel West using. Well, Lenny, I ask that everyone listening to me do follow the story of Colonel West using. It's conspicuous enough that we can hope that there will be further examination. Although, Lord knows, three-quarters of the British people think that David Kelly was assassinated, and official explanation hasn't changed from the official suicide story. So we don't know now, but there may come a time when things covered up now shall be revealed. And I guess that's the only hope of a resurrection that we can talk about here and now, which is the resurrection of the truth. And that's been laying in the tomb since 9/11, hasn't it, my friend?
It sure has, and it's a real pleasure and honor to have you here, and we look forward to having you back real soon to give us another update of what's going on behind the scenes in the global theater and the state secrets that the shadow government, the ruling elite, hope you don't learn. So thanks a lot, Captain May, and we look forward to having you back again real soon.
Lenny, I always close with some kind of salute to the different parts of the military, and this time I think we should finish with the phrase of the Chaplain's Corps, which is, I think, most fitting of Colonel West Husing, which is pro Deo et Patria. And that means, it's in Latin, as a compliment to the colonel who likes classical languages, it means for God and country. And I think we have here a patriot who showed that there is such a thing as military ethics and showed that there is such a thing as military intelligence. And now we're just waiting for media integrity. But the first two came easier than the third, I think. Lenny, it's a great pleasure, even under dark circumstances, and we'll remember the memory of our fallen comrade. This is Ghost Troop Captain May, signing out.
Read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because that will cause the propaganda to die. Good night, Captain May.
Good night, Lenny. Well...